Today, shock, you turn if you want to. Hi again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, working on this post covering finance and prop news with a distinctively Australian flavour. In this week's market summary, we're as usual going to start in the US, cover Europe and Asia, and end up in Australia, and we'll cover gold, oil and crypto as well. Now we start with the US because the US market trends drive other markets, like it or not. No market is an island, especially Australia. Now, it's worth recalling that back in 2018, when the Fed was conducting quantitative tightening and increasing rates, US mortgage rates were around 5%, the dollar index was around 97, oil was trading at just over $75 a barrel, and the 10-year rate was around 3%. But the Fed broke the markets, as the S&P 500 plunged by around 20%, and so they had to backpedal from rate hikes. Firstly, they held them steady, and then had to cut rates, and then restart quantitative easing by the autumn of 2019. Now think about this, just 4 years later, again we have mortgage rates in the US over 5%, the dollar index is at around 100, the oil is trading at over $100 a barrel, and the 10-year rate is now approaching 3%, and on top of that, the Fed is now embarking on an even bigger rate hiking cycle and is very likely to conduct quantitative tightening at double the pace of 2018. In fact, we covered some of these issues in detail yesterday because Federal Reserve Chairman Powell stopped an intraday rally on Thursday in its tracks after he signalled a 0.5% rate hike in May and that he was not unamenable to front-loading more 0.5% rate hikes. In fact, he cited a tight labour market and inflation at multi-decade highs. And fellow President Mary Daly also suggested 0.5% hikes, while the bull in the monetary China shop, James Bullard, reiterated his enthusiasm for a 0.75% hike. In comments during an interview with CNBC, Federal Reserve Bank of Cleveland President Loretta Mester pushed back against rising bets of a 75 basis point rate increase. She said, "I favour a more methodical approach to lifting rates rather than, you know, a shock of 75 basis points. I don't think it's needed for what we're trying to do with our policy. Money markets are now pricing in at least 4 half-point increases by the central bank's September meeting, according to the current interest rate swaps." And Mester, who votes for monetary policy decisions this year, is actually the last Fed official scheduled to speak publicly before policymakers enter a quiet period ahead of the May meeting. The blackout begins at midnight in the US. But the question to ask is, if the markets broke in 2018, and arguably now they are worse, what will happen this time around to make things any better? Rising oil prices, higher rates, and a stronger dollar will weaken global growth prospects, and that should, of course, work to reduce inflation. Markets are very uneasy about the growing likelihood of a policy error by the Federal Reserve. When a Fed official suggests a 50 basis point hike, markets immediately start trying to price in 75 basis point hikes, said Jamie Cox, managing partner at Harris Financial Group. No, actually, policy errors have already occurred as they cut too low, did too much QE for too long, and then ignored inflation as it appeared as transitory. A whole series of policy errors have already occurred, so could they make more errors? Well, for sure. It's madness, really, Cox said. Most investors would be well served to ignore the machinations of the pricing craziness and wait to see what actually happens with rates. The prospect of aggressive hikes was a boon to the US dollar, which surged to a more than 2-year high on Friday. The dollar index, which tracks the greenback versus a basket of 6 currencies, was last up 0.54% to 101.12, clearing levels not seen since March 2020. The dollar's surge took a toll on fellow safe haven gold, with spot gold prices falling 0.81% to 1,932. Converse to the notion of all boats that rise at high tide, hawkish talk by the Federal Reserve and other central banks are now pulling down all markets, safe havens included. Gold to silver, platinum and palladium joined oil and other energy commodities on Friday in the sea of red, buffeting Wall Street indices from the Dow to the S&P 500 and the Nasdaq. Every time you get this massive acceleration down in equities on rate hike talks, you're going to have some follow-through selling on precious metals. Philip Strebel, metals strategist at Blue Line Futures in Chicago, said the baby goes out with the bathwater, so to speak. Front-month gold June futures on New York's COMEX settled Friday's trade down $13.90, or 0.7%, to 1,934, and for the week it fell 2%, an unexpected slide after its upward swing on Monday to a six-week high of more than $2,000. High inflation and an uncertain economic environment have been very supportive for the yellow metal. I don't expect that to change, but the more tightening market prices in, the more resistance we'll see gold rallies, said Craig Ellum, analyst at online trading platform Honor. Of course, that may change if recession warnings start flashing, but as yet, there remains some confidence that this can be avoided, he said. The 5-30-year bonds have inverted again, which may cause some alarm, but at the moment, the 2-10 spread remains positive, just. Yields on US Treasury bonds were also on the uptick as traders prepared for higher rates, with short-dated bonds hitting 3-year highs on Friday, trading with the 5-year to 30-year tenor moving into that inversion. The prospect of even faster, more aggressive rate hikes and whether the Fed can achieve a soft landing was enough to sharply reverse equity markets, sending to a sharply lower finish. 2-year note yields, highly sensitive to interest rate moves, rose to 2.789%. That's the highest since December 2018, before dipping lower to 2.677% in the afternoon. And benchmark 10-year yields were last at 2.905 after reaching 2.981 on Wednesday, and also the highest since 2018. The 30-year was at 2.950. We're getting the same repeating message from central bankers, and each time, each repetition ratchets short interest rates higher, said Jim Vogel, an interest rate strategist at FHN Financials. To which I would add, and it looks like a coordinated campaign across central banks to lift rates higher to tackle inflation. Coordinated action by, well, unelected central bankers. Which begs the question, who is calling the shots? Much of the surge in oil is due to the war in Ukraine. However, the longer prices stay high, while nations are losing purchasing power due to the stronger dollar, the harder it will be to sustain economic growth. We've already seen some of the effects of this. For example, the IMF recently slashed its full year 2022 global growth projections to 3.6% from over 4%. These higher prices will slow growth, even in the US, with higher rates and energy prices making it more expensive. On top of that, the effects of higher rates will also work to tighten financial conditions, reduce the amount of leverage in the overall stock markets, and target asset prices overall. Property prices, of course, will follow. Headwinds are building for the US economy, stoking forecasts that recession risks are rising. The labour market, though, does remain resilient, suggesting that the economy could continue to expand in the near term. Private payrolls in March rose by a strong 426,000. That's marking the 10th straight month of 400,000 plus increases. Meanwhile, weekly filings for unemployment benefits, considered a leading indicator for the labour market and the economy, continues to print near 50-year lows, a sign that labour market stress remains low. A new research from Goldman Sachs also finds that the US jobs workers gap is the widest in post-war history, which offers support for thinking that the Federal Reserve could beat the odds and engineer a soft landing for the economy. History suggests that the central bank's efforts to lower inflation raises the odds of a recession, a hard landing. It's a delicate balance, but there are several reasons that it could be more achievable than in the past, said economists at Goldman Sachs. The difference between the total number of jobs, that's employment plus jobs opening, and the total number of workers, currently at 5.3 million plus, shows that the labour market is at its most overheated level in post-war history. Analysts at the investment bank reason that it should be easier to reduce the jobs-worker gap during this cycle than in the past because the employment market is still normalising after COVID disruption, which Goldman Sachs research expects will add as many as 1.5 million workers to the economy in excess of normal population growth. And unlike laying off workers, closing open positions doesn't have negative second-round effects that ripple through the economy. It helps that household balance sheets are stronger compared with the onset of most recessions, the bank adds. So overall, Goldman estimates the odds of a US recession in the next 12 months is just 15%. Others would put it much higher. One caveat is that payrolls are a lagging indicator, and so an economic recession could start well before it's obvious in the labour market. Investors, though, are hoping a flood of US quarterly reports next week, including those from mega-cap growth titans, will confirm a solid profit outlook for corporate America and bolster the case for stocks after a rocky start to the year. Nearly 100 companies in the S&P 500, worth roughly half of the benchmark index market value, are due to report next week. They include the four biggest US companies by market cap: Apple, Microsoft, Amazon, and Google's parent Alphabet. The latest round of earnings comes amid a backdrop of hawkishness from the Federal Reserve and a rapid rise in bond yields that has sparked unease about whether policymakers will damage the economy as they fight the worst inflation in nearly four decades. The S&P 500 has moved lower in April and was down around 9.5% so far this year as at Friday afternoon. With monetary policy weighing on stocks, bullish investors are counting on a solid corporate outlook to support markets, ratcheting up pressure on companies to report solid bottom-line results and forecasts. S&P 500 companies are estimated to increase earnings by 9% this year. It's probably the strongest argument you can make for owning stocks at this point that corporate profits are still very robust, said Charlie Ryan, portfolio manager at Evercore Wealth Management. Any fall in corporate profit growth and the cadence of that would spook the market. I would say it a bit differently. This is the last bastion of hope for the stock markets. So if performance does ease back in terms of profit growth, then shares will fall even further. But they fell broadly in New York, with materials and healthcare leading all 11 of the S&P 500 industry sectors lower. All three major Wall Street indices ended lower as well, more down more than 2%. At the close, the Dow was down 981 points, or 2.8%. The S&P 500 was down 2.8%, and the Nasdaq shed 2.6%. After years of being very accommodative, the Fed has made it clear that policy is going to be tighter for the foreseeable future, said Brian Price, head of investment management for Commonwealth Financial Network, and that's giving investors reason to rethink positions. The volatility index limped 24% to 28.38. Goldman Sachs' David Costin said the Fed's hard path to a soft landing signals more turbulence for growth stocks. The resumption of sustained growth stock outperformance will require equity investors to gain confidence that the economy will slow but avoid recession, and that inflation will soften enough to reduce the need for further tightening, he said. Such an outcome is possible, but investors are sceptical the Fed can achieve both goals without causing a recession in 2023. Rather than pure growth, investors should prioritize stability. Among the S&P 500 industry sectors, materials dropped 3.7%, health lost 3.6%, and the communication services sector fell 3.3%. The best performer was a 1.6% drop in consumer staples. And oil was down on the week as concerns of looming interest rate hikes, weaker global growth, and the COVID-19 lockdowns in China hurt demand, and that outweighed a potential European Union ban on Russian oil that would tighten supply. Brent crude fell 2% to 106.16, while US West Texas crude declined 2.03% to 101.69. UK retail sales fell 1.4% on the month in March, dropping for the third time in the last 4 months, with soaring fuel costs appearing to have an increasing impact on spending patterns. And the UK could well be back in the headlines again in the coming weeks, thanks to a word that I'd well hoped never to have to say again, Brexit. The regional Northern Ireland elections are on May the 5th, and due to the nightmarish nuances of Northern Irish politics, an increasing number of stories are now circulating that the British government may unilaterally change the Brexit agreement. And it's also worth noting that the UK confidence reads that came out on Friday morning dropped 38 thanks to the war in Eastern Europe and soaring inflation. The FTSE closed at 7,521, down 1.39%. And in Germany, the DAX shut at 14,142, down 2.48%. And the CAC 40 in France was down 1.99% to 6,581. This follows European Central Bank Vice President Louis de Guis acknowledging the possibility of a rate increase in July, potentially the bank's first in 12 years. Money markets are now pricing in 80 basis points of ECB rate hikes by the end of the year. The euro was down 0.39% to 1.0794, retreating in the face of a US yield pumped US dollar. Options volatility on the euro for Monday actually has fallen back sharply. That combined with an increasing amount of noise, Germany may be nearing a decision to ban Russian natural gas imports, should limit any gains by the single currency, or indeed European equities. And the world's major central banks are looking to tighten monetary policy to combat soaring inflation, just as the war in Ukraine weighs on the outlook for global growth. The World Bank estimates that the physical damage to Ukraine's buildings and infrastructure from Russia's invasion has reached roughly $60 billion to date, while Ukraine's prime minister put the total cost of rebuilding the country at $600 billion. President Macron of France has widened his lead over challenger Marine Le Pen ahead of this weekend's presidential runoff, and that has eased fears of a regime change that would, of course, shake Europe's foundations. In Asia, Japan's March manufacturing and services PMI clung to expansionary territory, just coming in at 53.4 and 50.5 respectively. That's a steady result from last month. More attention, though, was focused on inflation and core inflation for March. Headline inflation jumped, well, it's at Japan, of course, to 1.2% thanks to rising fresh vegetable prices. Core inflation, which is no vegetables but does include energy, was just up 0.8%. None of that will sway the Bank of Japan at next week's policy meeting, which makes sense given its intervention to cap 10-year yields at 0.25% this week. With the US yield curve still marching higher and the Bank of Japan maintaining multi-decade low rates, 130 to the US Japan is going to arrive sooner rather than later. Japan's Nikkei 225 closed down 1.63%. South Korea's KOSPI fell 0.86%. And Hong Kong's Hang Seng fell 0.21%. But China's Shanghai Composite inched up 0.23%. The yuan sell-off is threatening to become somewhat of a rout in relative terms as it tumbled again. The latest neutral US dollar yuan fixing by the PBOC will settle a ship for now, but the price action this week suggests that foreign money leaving the China equity and bond markets is in danger of becoming a flood. That isn't being helped by the PBOC seemingly looking to weaken the yuan anyway, potentially a poor man's path to supporting the manufacturing sector whilst allowing it to maintain neutral monetary policy at home. With the Shanghai lockdown dragging on and fears ever mounting that China's COVID-zero policy will torpedo 2022 growth, President Xi Jinping disappointed markets yesterday by reiterating his support for the policy in a speech. Similarly, the head of the People's Bank of China said the bank would concentrate on targeting support for small businesses and those impacted by COVID-19. That continues a recent trend of talking up support initiatives from officials but failing to deliver on a scale the market is looking for. Sure, we have the 0.25% RRR cut, while the one-year MTR and the 1 to 5 year LPRs have been left unchanged. But until markets see the colour of China's money, China equities will remain challenged. A weaker China, of course, is not good for Australia. Australian shares cut a five-day winning streak in abrupt fashion on Friday, suffering their biggest fall in 2 months as concerns about aggressive tightening by central banks rattled investors. The ASX 200 declined 1.6% to 7,473 on Friday. The ASX had the worst day in 2 months, dragging the benchmark index to a loss of 0.7% for the shortened four-day trading week. And of course, the ASX will be closed on Monday, the 25th of April for Anzac Day. The local market took a weak lead from Wall Street, and that translated to a 1.4% drop at the open for the local exchange, which was dragged lower by heavy losses across the materials and technology sectors. Resource stocks were hit by further evidence of slowing production because of COVID-19 disruptions and rising costs, accompanied by global inflationary pressures. OZ Minerals reiterated production and cost guidance are on track for the year despite interruptions because of the weather and the pandemic. The stock declined 6.3% to $24.55. Minerals Resources fell 2.2% to $60.70 after saying it was on track to meet guidance for the year ended June the 30th. Iron ore prices slipped on concerns of dwindling demand from China as the country pursues its zero COVID-19 strategy. The most traded September iron ore contract on China's commodity exchange fell by as much as 3% to $135.56 a ton. That's the lowest since April the 14th. BHP shed 4.4% to $48.49. Rio Tinto dropped 2.4% to $113.60. And Fortescue tumbled 1.2% to $21.22. Amongst the banks, Westpac dropped 1.2% to $24.21. After the federal court fined the bank $130 million for widespread compliance failures across multiple businesses, including its banking, superannuation, wealth management, and insurance brands. The other major banks also tumbled, weighing on the broader market. CBA fell 2.8% to $105.34. National Australia Bank declined 1.4% to $33.14. And ANZ closed 0.8% lower at $27.78. Shares in Megaport extended their decline from the day earlier, 21.6% fall, after the data center connectivity group's underwhelming business update. The stock dropped a further 9.7% to $9.04 on Friday. Block fell 6.5% to $146. Novonix declined 5.5% to $5.55, and Iris fell 3.4% to $11.18. The healthcare sector provided the market with some relief, though, as CSL rose 1.5% to $270.86 after earlier announcing a new $4 billion debt raising to help fund its $16.4 billion acquisition of Vifor Pharma. Australian preliminary manufacturing and services PMIs for April held steady, just in expansionary territory, at 56.6 and 56.2. And fears of a slowdown in China have not so far impacted Australia at this time, as the Russia-Ukraine war lifts global demand for everything that is pumped, it's dug, or grows out of the ground. The swings in sentiment to negative has left the Aussie dollar-US dollar dangerously close to technical support, though, and with an RBA stubbornly pushing back on inflation-chasing rate hikes, the US-Australia rate differential may start to weigh on the currency in the weeks ahead. Local currency was 1.8% lower to 72.37, and as I discussed yesterday, perhaps we cannot bank on another commodity boom to save us this time. Back in crypto land, Bitcoin was down 4.2% to around $39,730 US as the price continues to move sideways in an increasingly tightening trading range to the dismay of cryptocurrency investors. The bearish sentiment across the space is among the most prominent in years, potentially more bearish than the 2018 bear market. So in closing, let's come back to the central bank tightening issue. The goal of this tightening policy, which is sending rates high, is clearly to get inflation down. But it may very well be the case that the impact on demand may be more significant than is intended. After all, Look what happened just 4 years ago when the Fed had to make a complete U-turn from running off the balance sheet and raising rates regularly. And then that later was just a pause, and then that later led to rate cuts a few short months after that. It seems likely that this could well end in a similar way, with the Fed able to get a few rate hikes in, but the pain of higher rates, higher energy prices, and the reduction in leverage becomes too much for the markets to handle. One of these changes may be enough, but when they all come together, it may just be way too many. It may be even more than what is needed to get inflation to break. It may even mean the Fed has to do a major U-turn faster than anyone expects, compounding one policy mistake on another, with no accountability, but wrecking ordinary people in the process. It may come down to just how much the economy can handle at one time. So, sure, expect rates to rise, but then expect rates to fall. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.